Hello, friends. Welcome to This Day in Jack Benny. I'm John Henderson. And today, I'm very excited. I've got a very special guest, Jack Benny's oldest grandson, Mike. Mike, welcome to This Day in Jack Benny.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you are Jack Benny's actual grandson. That is so cool. I'm thrilled to talk to you.
Yes, I'm the oldest.
Tell me about, you know, Jack's parents and Mary's parents, and what does your family tree look like?
Well, the family tree doesn't go back very far because, as you know, my mother was adopted.
Yes, that's right.
And so that's as far back as her family tree goes.
Right.
And my father, I don't know, I didn't know very well, so I don't know that much about his family tree.
Right.
So as far as my natural family.
Right, right.
Then, of course, my grandparents, my adopted family, I know what I've read in the books and what my mother has told me, which is what everyone else knows. You know, he was born Benjamin Kabelski in Chicago, grew up in Waukegan. He was not a very good student when he was growing up, discovered the violin, played it very well, but discovered he could get quite a few laughs out of the violin, and continued to use the violin as a comic tool the rest of his life.
Yeah. Now, I've read in some places, but the details seem fuzzy, and they seem to change depending on where you read them. Your grandmother, Sadie Marx, is she related to the Marx brothers in any way?
Oh, that is confusing because I don't think she is.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she's not. My mother is the authoritative person on that. And I think, I'm pretty sure she said that she's not related. I think that question's come
okay.
up many times.
Yeah. So it's just a coincidence of the last name. And, that,
right.
you know, there's a story of Jack and Mary meeting at some event that had the Marx brothers there, which I think is maybe why people are confused.
Yeah.
So do you know any details from before you were born, like how and when and what were the circumstances for your grandparents, Jack and Mary, to adopt Joan?
Oh, what I know is that George Burns and Gracie Allen decided to adopt a kid. And I think it was sort of the in thing to do at the time. I think a bunch of other couples have adopted kids.
Oh.
And my grandparents decided to do that also. Especially, I think George and Gracie were the ones who sort of paved the way.
Your grandfather was very close to George Burns.
Very good friends.
Do you have any memories of George Burns?
Oh, yes, quite a few memories. Growing up, we used to spend Sundays at the Hillcrest Country Club, which is where, I guess, the Jewish Hollywood people went, and all the Catholic people went to the Los Angeles Country Club, which was across the street, I believe.
Huh.
And there was a table there every Sunday morning. I'd go have brunch, and the table would be George Burns, my grandfather, maybe George Jessel, maybe Milton Berle, and they'd all be playing poker.
Really?
I think it was poker they were playing. It may not be poker.
Sure.
They were playing cards.
Yeah.
Remember, I wasn't allowed in that room very much because it was a bar, and those days kids weren't allowed to be in bars where they served alcohol.
Right.
I had to stay in the next room. But occasionally, I snuck in.
So what did you do in the next room?
Oh, eat.
Eat.
They had a great buffet. Ate. I was there. In fact, I was usually there with my other grandparents on my father's side.
Really?
They happened to be born in the same country club and lived across the street also. And so we usually went with them, and coincidentally, my other grandfather would be there.
So what was your impression of George Burns and, George Jessel and Milton Berle? What was your impression of them as a kid?
I didn't understand them.
Really?
But their jokes and the laugh and whatever they were laughing at, I never understood what they were laughing at, what the jokes were.
Yeah.
And now, sometimes I couldn't tell they were making fun of me, or they were laughing at me, or laughing with me. I could never quite figure out what they were doing.
Right.
They were too far advanced for me. My grandfather, I could always tell what he was laughing at. But not George Burns, especially.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And unfortunately, I didn't know Gracie Allen. I wish I could have known her, but she died before my time.
Oh, really? So you were born at, I would say, the height of Jack Benny's fame. Is that true, do you think?
Yes, 1955. That would have been, yes.
I think so.
By the time I was old enough to know anything, 10 or 12, it was already a little bit past the prime. I mean, he was still very popular, but it was not quite the super prime in 55.
So when you were born, being the first grandchild, was there like a media frenzy? I imagine there was a lot of press.
I believe so. In fact, there's a picture of my mother holding me up in the hospital there's my grandfather next to her beaming at the new child. And I happened to be on eBay a couple years ago and came across a photograph on eBay that was had the exact same picture, but instead of my grandfather, it was my father. And it was obviously a publicity shot. They had to just interchange people for the different shots.
No way.
And so from the time I was born, it was an immediate thing.
So they, before Photoshop was even invented, replaced your father with Jack Benny so they could get like the perfect shot for the newspapers or whatever.
Well, I don't know if they replaced him, but they took two different photographs.
Oh, I see.
Two different photographs.
I ran across this interesting article. You know how online you can get like all the old magazines these days?
Uh-huh.
So there's like a radio television magazine, and there's a feature story about you being born. I think it's actually from a little bit after you being born. But they're talking about how the media is crazy about the fact that Jack Benny is a grandfather at age 39.
Right. In fact, that's how old I am.
Oh.
Not really, but yeah, because I was born in 55, I'm still 39.
So, I mean, you mentioned going to the country club with your grandfather. What other memories do you have with Jack Benny?
Wow, I've got so many memories. The best memory, probably the best day of my life, was on my 14th birthday, 1969, July 16th, was the launch of Apollo 11. And he was invited down to the launch. And he chose not to take one person. And he chose me instead of my mother. My mother never forgave me for that. She wanted to go. But he chose me. And I remember I got to tour the Cape Canaveral and see the Saturn rockets. And as a kid of 14, I saw Apollo 13, I believe, was on the tractor trailer and take it out to the bay where they blasted the rockets off from.
Right.
And I remember how the size of Apollo, of that Saturn rocket, was so big, and I could not see the curvature. It looked like a solid wall.
Huh.
And I was so small, I could do a solid wall. I could not see the curve at all. I remember the treads on the tractor being like, each tread was like three times as tall as I was. The scale of these things is just incredible. And the fact they got them off the ground into the moon was just awesome. But then I had to decide whether I wanted to watch the launch from the VIP stand with my grandfather or whether I wanted to watch it from Mission Control.
Oh.
I decided to watch it from Mission Control. And in Mission Control, I got to sit next to Dr. Wernher von Braun.
No way.
Because he's the man who invented the rocket. And Mission Control looks just like what you see in all the movies, you know, all the different monitors and all the different people. And it was really incredible watching it from Mission Control. And then you watch the landing, the moonwalk together. And that was pretty awesome, too.
You watched it on television at home?
No, we watched it. My grandfather was out, I think, in Indianapolis at the time.
Okay.
He was doing a show in Indianapolis.
So, but you were watching it just on a regular TV?
I believe so, yes.
So, do you think that your grandfather chose you to go to that because, you know, he knew that you would appreciate it as a boy of your age? Or do you think it was because you were his favorite?
Oh, I think it was because, well, it was between my mother and myself. My sister, he didn't want to take my sister because she was a girl and she would have had to, you know, he had to be more responsible for her.
Okay.
I was sort of independent.
Yeah.
Then because I was big into science, I really like science, I think that was the reason. He knew I would like it.
So I'm just curious, what did you call your grandfather?
Granddad.
Granddad. Oh, interesting. Yeah. And so then did you call your grandmother grandmom? Or?
No, she never stood for that. she was called Miss Mary.
Really?
Yes.
So you called her Miss Mary?
We called her Miss Mary.
So what was she like? What are your memories of her as a kid?
My memories, well, she wasn't as friendly as Granddad. She didn't travel a lot with him. My first memories were that they slept in separate bedrooms.
Really?
And at the houses that they had, my grandmother had this humongous suite of rooms, humongous bedroom, humongous walk-in closets with shoes of every color and make and size, and big bathroom. My grandfather would have a room that was maybe the size of like a college dorm room, just enough room for a bed and a table kind of thing.
Huh.
A little dressing room and a bathroom. So, you know, and my grandmother would have the whole rest of the floor. And every single house they lived in was like that. I never thought that was quite fair. I never understood that. But he didn't really care the size of the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that we had to be quiet in the mornings when I was over there because she liked to sleep in. She wore things over her ears to block out the noise and I've blindfolded over her eyes to block out the sun, and three layers of curtains to block out the sun on the curtains. And she couldn't make any noise. And she was sleeping forever, like until 11. Because she's not great at the kid not being able to make noise until 11.
Oh, yeah.
My grandfather started playing the violin early. He practiced the violin, I don't know what time, maybe 7 o'clock. And I would always go into the dressing room and sit in the dressing room and watch him, listen to him practice violin when I was there. And I remember doing that from a very early age. I just pictured him doing that to me when I was still a baby.
How often would you go and visit them or stay with them?
It would be every weekend, every Friday night. It may have been every other Friday, but I think it was every Friday, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And then back home again on Sunday.
Yeah. So, but like around what ages? Is this when you're like 8 or?
Oh, this is elementary school. So this would have been, this would have been like 7.
Yeah.
7 to 12 or something like that. This is when they had their house on Roxbury.
Okay.
Before they moved.
Right, right. So tell me some more stories that you can remember about Jack.
Well, I remember everywhere I went with him, people was asking for his autographs.
Oh, right, yeah.
And sometimes I thought that was neat. Sometimes I thought they just got in the way and wished they would all go away.
But right, yeah.
He was always really kind. He always gave everyone his autograph. And he always stopped to speak to everyone. The thing I remember the most, like everyone else, is his kindness and his generosity.
Mm-hmm.
One of my birthdays, he wanted to buy me a merry-go-round complete with real horses.
Oh, wow.
My mother intervened and said no.
Yeah. Logistically, there's some problems with that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember traveling a lot with him. We went to spent a lot of time in New York. All my holidays were spent in Las Vegas when he was playing in Las Vegas. And it was usually just me. Occasionally, my sister would go, but most of the time, it was just myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Christmas Day, the rest of the family would join for a couple of days, and then they'd all go home and meet me and my grandfather again. Not that we did a whole lot together, but it was just fun being with him, because he was always doing business stuff and rehearsals and stuff like that during the daytime, and I'd be out doing my own thing.
So it seemed like a lot of times he was on tour. What was he doing, like stage performances?
Yeah, yes, he was doing stand-up, basically.
Would they mostly be by himself or like with, the cast or some people?
No, by himself, and then he always had someone, singer, who halfway through would sing some songs while he took a break, then he could come back for the second half. Oh. And the singers range anywhere from Pearl Bailey. She's the one I remember the most.
Oh, yeah. She's like a gospel singer, right?
Right, and she had just done, I think, My Fair Lady, the Black version of My Fair Lady on Broadway. And Shani Wallace, who was the original in the movie Oliver. They were always singers that I'd heard of, but never like, the superstar singers. Cause they'd only sing a few songs during intermission.
Yeah.
Right. I remember Pearl Bailey, when she was on stage, she didn't like anyone backstage. Cause she had to sing about people backstage when she was singing. So when she was on stage, backstage had to be cleared out.
Oh, interesting.
And I remember one night, I was bored and had nothing else to do. And there was a dartboard backstage. I figured darts don't make any noise at all. I would just throw a couple of darts at the dartboard, no one would ever know the difference.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I missed the dartboard on one of my throws and hit one of those big Klieg lights, and then exploded.
Oh.
And I ran for it, but I still got in lots of trouble for that one.
So these are the television days. Did you ever get to visit the set or meet any of the co-stars?
I remember I go to the filmings of a lot of his shows, especially when he was doing a guest on the I Love Lucy show, which was quite frequent. Filmings of those. And so I remember all those, and of course what I've seen of the TV shows, especially the vault, because Lucy's shows often involves his vault, getting the money from the vault. Mel Blanc, of course, Rochester. I don't have much memory of Dennis Day or Phil Harris or Don Wilson. I'm sure I met them, but I don't really have any memory of them.
Right, yeah. Tell me about being a kid and your grandfather being famous. Did other kids know? What was their reaction?
Well, growing up in Beverly Hills, everyone's kids were famous. So it wasn't a big deal, really.
So
I'm famous parents.
Right.
It wasn't until I went away to prep school when I was 14 years old to New York. I was the Hollywood kid, and everyone wanted to ask me about what it was like growing up in Hollywood. And the question they all asked me was if I'd ever seen the Beverly Hillbillies house.
Oh, really?
That was the one question on everyone's mind was if I'd seen the Beverly Hills on this house.
Right, because it's Beverly Hills.
It doesn't really exist. When I was back east at prep school, I got lots of special treatment from the other students because of my grandfather. Some of the parents would want to get to know me, so they would like Tim away on the weekends so I can meet them and ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I got special treatment, I think.
So how would you describe your mother, Joan? What was she like?
She was, growing up, she was actually absent a lot of the time. We were raised by governesses and maids. She was very young when she had me. No, I don't know exactly how young, she won't tell me. Anywhere from 16 to 22 or 23, I'm not sure. She won't tell anyone. So I don't remember her being around us. I remember when she was around at dinner time, you had to be quiet. Children would be seen and not heard.
Really?
I remember every Thursday night, we had liver. Every Tuesday night, we had liver. And later on, my sister and I, we talked to my mother about this. She reminded me, remember when we had to have liver every Tuesday night? And she said, you had to have liver every Tuesday night? I did too. And I swore to myself, when I had kids, I would never make them eat liver every week. And she had no idea that we were being served liver every week.
Right.
I remember getting dressed up. She was always going out to big events, spending a lot of time getting dressed up, many hours getting dressed up, coming downstairs looking extremely beautiful, and then going out to big events.
Mm-hmm.
A couple times, actually one of the great memories was one time the grandfather was there and they had some guests over for dinner. And the guests were Yasha Heifetz, Arthur Rubinstein, and Kata Gorski. So the piano player, the violin player, and the cellist.
Right.
Most famous in the world. And after dinner, they all played chamber music in the living room.
Really?
My sister and I were not allowed in the living room. We had to go upstairs. But I remember, instead of going to bed, we sat at the railing upstairs and just listened to this glorious music coming from the living room.
Yeah.
They were just playing whatever they wanted to play. And it was just incredible.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Occasionally, stuff my grandfather would play with him. He'd do okay. He'd do okay with him.
Right. Was he as bad as he seemed on the radio and television?
No, he wasn't that bad at all. I mean, he wasn't fabulous, but he was an adequate violin player, more than adequate.
Mm-hmm. So then what's your relationship like with your mother now or since you've been grown up?
It's much better now. In fact, she's in town right now. I just had lunch with her 2 days ago. She's mellowed out a lot as she's gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship is pretty good.
Were you around when she was writing her book, which is, I know that it's
yes.
sort of half memoir of Jack Benny and then half of her original writings.
No, I mean, I was around, but I wasn't nearby because I was in medical school at the time.
Oh, really?
No, wait. I'm sorry. I was in college. I was at Stanford at the time. That's when he died. I'm not sure when she wrote the book. It was soon after that, I believe.
Well, I think I heard that it was right after her mother died, so that would be 10 years
that's
after.
That's what I thought. Right. That's what I was thinking. That's when I was in medical school.
Okay.
She died when I was in medical school. Yeah, I remember a couple of other books came out at the same time. One by Irving Fine, who was his manager, and I think there's another book also came in.
Okay.
My mother wanted to write like a book that was more accurate than those two books. Mm. Less biased.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So do you know, I mean, obviously you weren't there, you were in medical school, but do you know how she wrote it?
No.
Did she write it with somebody else or?
Oh, I don't know. I think she might have, but I don't know that. I'm pretty sure she did.
Okay. Hang on, let me just grab it here for a second. Yeah, I just found it. I was really lucky. I found it at a thrift store. I don't think it's still in print.
Sunday night at 7?
That's right. All right, let me just read a couple of things here. About you, I think it's so interesting. Michael was born about 9 in the morning. Mother and daddy, that would be Jack and Mary, went nuts. The press went nuts. The maternity wing of St. Sinai Hospital went nuts. Between photographers, reporters, visitors, followers, and telegrams, it was bedlam. Do you hear many stories about when you were born and when you were young?
No. I don't. No.
You never did, even when you were young?
I don't remember that at all. Yeah, I think the youngest I can remember of anything was maybe when I was 6 or 7.
Okay, and then here it says, this is talking about Jack. Daddy couldn't get enough of his grandchildren, but Mike, the firstborn, was his pet. By the time he was 6 years old, he had usurped my place. Now the gin games and baseball games and traveling were no longer with me. They were with him.
I forgot about the baseball games, yes.
You went to a lot of baseball games with him?
Yes, because he was good friends with the owner. Walter O'Malley,
huh.
And used to sit in the dugout. And those are the days when the Dodgers were a team. You had Sandy Koufax and Willie Mays, and you know, the same players year after year. It was a team and a family. Not like now, we have different people every year.
Yeah,
and there's no sense of family anymore.
So, did you get to meet some of your baseball heroes?
Oh yes, I met them all. I have to say, though, baseball was not my favorite game. I went because it was fun to go with my grandfather. I started learning to like baseball. I didn't like it at the beginning, but much so often I learned to like it.
Yeah.
I've never been a real big sports fan.
Mm-hmm. There's also a story in the book, which I'd love for you to tell, about when he put you in charge of his Stradivarius violin, a very expensive violin.
Yes. Yep, yep. He had a Stradivarius, which is, you know, as you said, a very expensive violin. It was only a couple hundred, I think, in existence. He was known as the Benny Strad. And he was in Las Vegas, as usual. And he did he was always doing two performances a night. There's a dinner show and then a cocktail show. In between the two shows, there was maybe an hour and a half break. And I was in the dressing room, and one night, and the show was over, and I was watching Mission Impossible, which is my favorite TV show.
Oh, awesome.
And it was still on. And he wanted to leave to go meet some people and said, you know, you stay and watch Mission Impossible. When you're done, make sure you lock the door because my violin is here.
Uh-huh.
And so Mission Impossible ended. But I wanted to go up to my room in the hotel to get some things, but I wanted to come back. If I locked the door, I couldn't get back in.
Right.
I knew about the violin. So I hid the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I figured I'd be okay. Unfortunately, he got back before I got back and couldn't find the violin, and he called the police. And I showed up in the place swarming with police trying to find the violin. I calmly walked in. I hid it in the shower. I walked in the shower and said, here's the violin. And they didn't think that was very funny either.
Oh, man. So what was his reaction? Like, obviously, big trouble.
Yeah, big trouble, but I expected more trouble. I expected I was going to get into more trouble than I did. I really didn't get in that much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think he forgave me. I think he thought I was pretty funny quickly. He didn't stay angry very long.
Yeah.
Long because the violin was found. If violin had been missing, that would have been a different story.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder, growing up with Jack Benny, I imagine that you were pretty familiar with his comedy and things.
Yes.
Did you ever think it was funny?
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're young, having already heard it, you know, isn't it kind of old news now?
Yeah, I mean, yes. But sometimes, you know, I watch the TV shows on DVD or on the old, you know, stations, and I still laugh at a lot of the stuff. I think these shows are still very funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's timing. And I didn't realize, you know, how much work went into the timing. I thought it was one of those natural things. You just naturally knew how long to hold that position, or put his hand on his chin. How long he had to do that. He didn't do that naturally. He actually timed it.
Really?
He actually counted down the second. And that all timed and figured out to do each one of those things that I didn't realize.
That's fascinating. You certainly can't tell.
I don't know about the whole thing came natural to him. And yeah, he spent a lot of time rehearsing all that stuff.
Right.
Figuring it all out exactly.
Yeah, I think the best performers are able to, like, concentrate and do that sort of thing, but make it look natural.
You know, he always had a little checklist of things he wanted to talk about, but he kept in his pocket with it. He'd be out in the show after he finished talking about something, being on the checklist and go to the next subject on the checklist.
Uh-huh.
But the other thing I remember growing up was comedy, was laughter. He was surrounded by laughter. He was surrounded by the funniest people you've ever met. Eddie DeCordova, who later on became Johnny Carson's producer, I think he was one of the funniest men I've ever met.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of the writers could not say anything that was not funny. Mel Brooks. People like that, you know, they don't know how to say something that's not funny. It's not in the bones.
Right.
Everything they say is funny. My grandfather laughed at the silliest things. It didn't have to be super funny for him to laugh at.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I think one year for Christmas, I got him a book, you know, in the drugstore, 101 funny jokes.
Yeah, like totally. Like for Christmas. The classic.
And he thought that was very funny.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was very funny.
So what was his demeanor like? I mean, there's some comedians, like you said, like Mel Brooks, who are like always on. And then there's others like maybe like a Steve Martin, who's, when he's on stage, he's on. And when he's off stage, he's off.
Right. My grandfather was like that too. When he was off stage, he was a different person almost. I mean, he was funny and he wasn't that funny. He laughed a lot at people's jokes, but he wasn't funny himself.
Huh.
And as soon as he walked on stage, and then all of a sudden he became like 10 years younger. And his walk would be more brisk and he would be like a whole new person.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of amazing to see the transformation.
I mean, I could hear stories all day. If you've got any more stories, you know, jump in.
One of the most vivid memories I have of my grandfather was really in his dressing room when he was playing the violin for me in the morning.
That's right, yeah.
Saturday mornings. That'd be my most vivid memory. And going to the theater a lot with him. My grandmother didn't go out very much. I didn't go out. She went out hardly at all. I don't really have that many memories of her, except for her sitting upstairs watching television all the time.
Huh, interesting.
And she had good, moods and bad moods. You had to always make sure she was in a good mood when you went to see her.
So tell me about your family. You've got three siblings, is that right?
I have three siblings. My sister Maria, who's 2 years younger than me. And then I have another brother and sister who are like 10 and 11 years younger than me, who I do not know at all.
Really?
At the time they were of age to be able to be interesting, you know, 67, I was off at prep school in New York, upstate New York, and from there I went to Stanford, and I was never home again. So I never really got to know them at all.
Right. Do you ever connect with them these days, or is it just kind of a passing thing?
Very seldom. Very seldom.
And what about children? Do you have any children?
No.
What about nieces and nephews? Do you have nieces and nephews?
Yes. My younger brother and younger sister have kids. My sister is 2 years younger than Maria, does not have any children either.
Okay.
I was too busy with my career.
Yeah. I was just curious if the great-grandchildren have heard much about Jack Benny.
Well, they probably have, but you know, their parents, Joanna and Brad, didn't know my grandfather very well. Again, they were so young.
Right.
When he died, he was still only, they were eight or something like that when he died, eight or nine.
Can you remember thinking about, like you mentioned, some of the famous people who you've come in contact with? Can you remember any other famous people who either you were really impressed with because they were somebody who you were into at the time, or somebody who maybe you didn't know at all, who later you found out was somebody very talented?
Well, actually, you should ask that because last night I was watching a movie, Death Becomes Her, with Goldie Hawn. And she's one of those people. I remember her at my grandfather's wake. And everyone was, you know, laughing and telling jokes and having a good time. And I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand why people were laughing and telling good jokes when my grandfather just died.
Mm.
And I was down the hall sitting in a chair and they're all sad. And I think I was crying. And I looked up and Goldie Hawn was in the chair next to me, just crying herself. Mm. And we talked for a while. And so she was the only person, you know, at the party who seemed to me who was sad that my grandfather had died. And so I felt an instant connection to her. I've always loved her since then.
Mm-hmm. So when he died, what was the funeral like? Was it very large?
Yes, it was very large. First thing I remember was being taken to the funeral and the hearse, the limousine with the policeman going in before us and stopping all the traffic and making sure we got through without any red lights. And that was sort of cool. But it was a large funeral. Everyone in Hollywood was there. Megan was there. Sinatra, everyone was at the funeral. And I remember that I was one of the pallbearers. I remember how heavy that casket was.
Mm.
But there were lots of people at the funeral.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe the funeral book with all the people's signatures, my little brother just bought that book. He found it online, I believe, or something like that. And he bought the book. $1,000 has all the signatures in it.
Mm, wow.
The signatures.
Do you remember the service at all? What happened? Who spoke?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Right.
I don't even remember what was said.
Huh. Wow.
I was too sad and crying the whole time.
Yeah. So then what was it like at your grandmother's funeral?
I did not remember her funeral at all. No one's ever asked me that. And now that I think about it, I don't remember her funeral.
Huh.
I'm sure I went.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure she had one. I'm sure she did, but I don't know where it was. Oh, it had to be the same place, I guess, because she's buried the same place.
Right.
I don't remember it at all.
Huh.
That's very funny that they say that. But yeah, I have no memory of that. Huh.
Interesting. What do you think you would like people to remember about Jack Benny and, you know, his legacy?
That he was funny.
Yeah.
If people remember him as being stingy, I think that's okay. I mean, he wasn't stingy. He's the opposite. But if people want to remember him from being stingy, that's nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah.
That was his character. But mostly that he was mostly that he was funny.
Definitely.
And he made people laugh. And he made people laugh without having to use swear words or off-color jokes.
Yeah. There's something about his comedy that is just timeless. It's not that, like, you can watch some old stuff and it's just very dated, but there's something about his character that transcends time.
Right. I have friends now who play an episode and they've seen it for the very first time and they'll all laugh at it.
Yeah.
I think it's very funny.
I mean, I've been thinking about what it is that makes Jack Benny so funny, because, you know, the thing people always say, like, oh, the Maxwell, or he's cheap, or he's always 39, or you know, I hear that and I'm like, yeah, that's funny, but that's not what's funny about it. And I think the thing is that he's torn between something that everybody is always torn with, the way that he looks to people and what he really wants. You know what I mean? And I think that is just the genius of his comedy, where you can see like something very expensive coming up and you can see him say, well, and you can just, you can fill in the inner monologue of him, you know, wanting to not appear cheap, but just really being cheap.
Right. You know, and his timing was just perfect.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think he must have invented the thing of just like his reactions, just like slowly looking to the audience or the camera and just getting a huge laugh. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious.
What's funny is seeing how many people imitate him now. I mean, going from Johnny Carson to Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And even Larry David, the Curb Your Enthusiasm guy.
Oh,
Because, again, it's when you think of the thing of him being torn between, you know, how he appears and then what he really wants.
I don't know. I love Larry David. I think he's extremely funny.
Yeah.
But I think it's very different. He's like the character that you hate.
Yeah.
In a way.
Well, that's true.
So he's extremely funny.
Yeah. Jack Benny's definitely very likable, but the butt of the joke. So I guess he's sort of the flip side of that.
Right.
All right. One last thing. This podcast is called This Day in Jack Benny. Can you name something Jack Benny related that happened on August 1st of any year?
August 1st. Oh, no. August 1st. Can't think of any significance of that date.
I don't have anything in the
landing on the moon, but that wasn't August 1st. That was before that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know either. I was just... The nearest thing I could think of is his USO tours he always did in the summertime. So I'm sure he was on a USO tour in the South Pacific in some August 1st.
I'm sure. Before my time.
Well, I've had a lot of fun talking with you and hearing those stories. Thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
My guest today has been Michael Rudolph, the oldest grandson of Jack Benny. Thank you to him. Thank you to our Patreon supporters who got this episode early when it was still August 1st. And if you'd like to become a supporter, go to thisdaybenny.com and click on Become a Patron. ThisDayBenny.com. Thanks.